on that scale. The VA is all across the land, from Maine to Manila, even. And so the VA gets the best prices in the US for medicine, because if Big Pharma doesn't want to pay that price, the VA will say, all right, well, then I won't do business with you. And they've just lost a huge swath of business. So the VA has that bargaining power, that negotiating power. It's kind of like collective bargaining. They have that negotiating power to get the good prices. State of Oregon could have that kind of power if we were in a single payer system, and they would be able to rein in some of those big pharma costs. But I'll hand it off to Mary Beth. Anything I missed there, Mary Beth?
No, but I think actually when talking about negotiating power as it relates to prescription drugs, Oregon actually does have the Oregon, well, used to be called the Oregon Prescription Drug Program. It's now called ArrayRx. And this, you know, for any listener who struggles with paying for their pharmaceuticals, really check out ArrayRx. I think it's arrayrx.org. But if you Google the Oregon Prescription Drug Program, it will come up. And this entity was formed back in those early double aughts, Emma, that I was talking about, when there were reforms done on cost, access, and accountability. And it did create basically a PBM, or a negotiating tool, that the state of Oregon had for Oregonians who, at that point, you know, very small group of folks who couldn't, you know, who are 54 years or older, at or above a certain federal poverty line, et cetera, et cetera. And so that was like in 2003. And it really significantly helped patients, even though it was teeny at the time. And I remember this one couple in particular. They lived out in Washington County, and Mike had throat cancer. And you know, he had to take liquid morphine, which is incredibly expensive. And you know, he hadn't been able to work, so they were really struggling with being able to afford the $400 prescription for this liquid morphine. And so, you know, they were one of the first people to sign up for this program. The spouse calls me up, and she's like, you know, in tears, because she's really worried. I'm like, have you talked to the pharmacist? Have you showed them your card? She's like, no. So, long story short, she calls me back after talking to the pharmacist. She is in tears again, but now from happiness, Emma, because that $400 prescription was $40 with that card. And since then, the program has expanded. Washington State joined in the double aughts. Nevada joined a couple of years ago. And the state of Connecticut actually just joined recently. So we do have this tool in Oregon that to negotiate lower prices for pharmaceuticals. And we will really be encouraging some strengthening of that in 2025 in the legislature, because there is no reason why all the other public entities that have been eligible to do their drug purchasing in this manner for over a decade aren't doing it. And again, I want to say it's 19, 20 cents of every healthcare dollar goes to prescription drug costs. So if you can reduce that even by 50%, that's hundreds of thousands of dollars that health plans alone can save, never mind individuals. So we want to use those tools to give us that negotiating power in all of those sectors of healthcare.
Before we get to the total plan, where we have a universal health plan, which, you know, we're going to get there. You know, I would love it if the CCOs would all use that program that Mary Beth's talking about. It's so smart and so good.
So we've talked about the state of Oregon's healthcare system, about some of the crises and issues that are facing hospitals, especially rural hospitals. And you've been mentioning all along some of the progress that's been made toward a universal single-payer healthcare system here in Oregon. So I'd like to kind of migrate over toward that conversation. First, I want to just remind everyone you're listening to KBOO Community Radio. We're talking today with Valdez Bravo, who I believe are you the chair of HCAO?
President.
The president, yeah. And then with Mary Beth Healy, who is the executive director of Healthcare for All Oregon.
Indeed.
Great. Thanks so much. And so let's talk about, first of all, remind me again, what progress again has been made? You mentioned a couple of bills that have been passed, the board, of course, the ballot measure that got passed. So what else has been happening with HCAO in terms of making progress toward the goal of universal single-payer health care? And then we'll start talking about what would it mean to actually have that kind of a system here in Oregon?
Sure. Yeah, let me take first attempt at that, and then I think Mary Beth can kind of bring it up to what we're doing today. So again, in case you're just joining, I'll do it real quick. You know, Healthcare for Oregon has been around for 23 plus years, advocating. We have four aspects of our strategic plan. We basically educate and advocate on universal, publicly funded universal healthcare here in Oregon. The second, we try to gather resources to do that work, be it volunteers, be it donations, be it sponsorships, grants, et cetera. Then we take those resources and we mobilize them to do more education and awareness building and then pushing for legislative wins. And then that's our fourth one. At the end of the day, we want to make real change happen. And we have been doing that with legislative change. We did it with Senate Bill 770 in 2019, which set up a joint task force on universal healthcare to study the issue for about a little over 3 years, asking Oregonians, communities of color, providers, patients, everyone, what they wanted to see in the universal healthcare system. Along the way in 2022, Oregon passed Measure 111. Thank you, Oregon, all you voters out there, which added healthcare as a human right into our constitution. And then we stood up in Senate Bill 1089 and the Joint Task Force, or sorry, the Universal Health Plan Governance Board, which is a 9-person panel, governor appointed, Senate confirmed with an executive director to support them, to basically take the facts, figures, and findings and recommendations of that joint task force in universal healthcare and create a working model. And I'll just say that, you know, if you go to hcao.org, that's our website, hcao.org, you can check on legislation and read all these documents and see for yourself. But where we stand today now is we have this universal health plan governance board that's been newly stood up, you know, last month. And we're going to work to support them in the work that they do. And I'm going to ask Mary Beth to talk a little bit about where that's at right now. But the other thing I want to say is along the way, Healthcare for Oregon, we are a largely volunteer-led organization. We have members all around the state. We have chapters all around the state. We really try to be bi-directional and bring the input in from all the chapters, urban and rural, as far away as Jackson County and Union County and coming up, even though we're based out of the Portland area, we try not to be Portland-centric. And we basically have members all across. We have people that have signed our statement of support. We have people that are members and they pay $10, $20, $30 monthly dues. And that's how it fuels this work going. And then we have sponsors and we go for grants and other things like that. But really, we've also, Emma, been doing that kind of under the hood work as an organization to build, to strengthen. We've got an awesome board. You can read about our board and who they are. I'm the president, but we've got other board members as well, obviously. And they're on the website. And we are basically have this, assembling this dream team that when it comes to what Mary Beth's going to talk about, where we're at with the governance board and how that's going to potentially translate into this new future reality where everyone we know in Oregon has healthcare, we're basically building the under the hood infrastructure to I won't say fight that battle, but to win that campaign, I'll say. I'll hand it over to Mary Beth to talk about where the governance board is at.
Yes, thanks, Valdez. We are very excited. You know, there were a lot of people that applied for the governance board. And so the 9-member board is really, I think, well suited. The executive director has a great public health background. So we think that they're really in a good position to kind of jumpstart their work from that 770 task force. And then our role, you know, is to really educate and activate Oregonians around the work that the governance board is doing. And, you know, in order to do that, you have to build power, right? I talked about it a little bit. About having the power to ultimately do this really big thing, right? Because it is a really big thing. And I don't want to, you know, quote the former vice president who's currently president, but when Oregon passes our universal health plan, it is going to be a big deal, but we can't do it alone, right? It's not going to be Valdez and me and a handful of lawmakers, right? And you know, and thousands of supporters. It is going to take hundreds of thousands of Oregonians banding together and joining us in this battle as members, as advocates, to make this a reality, right? We cannot do it alone. So I'll also plug our website, you know, become a member, right? It's $30 a year. You can be a sustainer at whatever level is good for you. But that is how you build power, as we know. And if we're going to beat the insurance, pharmaceutical, and, you know, medical industrialized system that we have here in our complex, that was the word I was looking for, we need people behind us. And so we just encourage people to get involved. We've got tons of ways to do that. And Emma, I'm not sure, but, you know, we put on this annual blues event that KBOO has been part of over the years, and actually it's coming up on May 10th, where folks can come down to the Aladdin. We've got Rhythm in Rio, where the blues takes on a Brazilian beat, so we're going to have a really good time with Norman Sylvester and Bloco Alegria, and folks can come down there, get a ticket, support HCAO, support KBOO, right, and have a great night, learn some updates, and get involved in this this organization and in this effort, because you know, we can't do it alone, right? And if I could encourage all, you know, 4 million people in Oregon to join us today, I would do that. But those of us in hearing my voice, please go to our website. We're doing a lot of great work, and we'd love to have you join us.
One thing I wanted to add also, just on to kind of build on what Mary Beth said, is, you know, I was one of many people that was really excited about Measure 97 back in the day, right? We're going to make corporations pay their fair share of taxes. And as we all know, that was, you know, one of the most expensive, maybe the most expensive campaign in terms of dollars spent trying to defeat something, right? This is going to be something that would have uplifted all Oregonians. It would have made corporations who are paying sometimes, you know, living to nothing, their fair share for what they, the profits are getting extracting out of Oregon. And we saw the kind of heavy opposition that came in, right? The millions of dollars those corporations spent on that campaign outside coming in, you know, other corporations seeing this as like, we don't want that to happen in Oregon. It might happen where we are in our other state too. And they just came out against us. And like, there's that old Doors song, you know, when the music's over, they've got the guns, but we've got the numbers. We had the numbers there, but we didn't have enough number. And, you know, Measure 97 did not, you know, we ultimately were not able to get that passed. I think that is going to be just a fraction probably of the type of a fight that's going to come down from the big insurance companies, from the big pharma, and a lot of these other big groups that would like nothing more than for us to have our failed status quo of a broken healthcare system that richens corporations to keep going. So that's why, you know, when Mary Beth says, please, you know, go to hcao.org, consider signing statements before, we'd love for you to become a member, become a sustainer, all the things, we're going to try to make sure that, and that's why we're so thankful to you, Emma, for this opportunity. We need to do more work. We want to make sure that not only is Healthcare for Oregon a household name across Oregon, but it is a trusted name. So we can, using the public health mindset that I now have working at the county, that we can inoculate the Oregonians from the myths, the lies, the deception. Who knows what AI will be doing in a couple years when this kind of stuff goes on. We need to inoculate them now and make sure that they know that this is something that if they vote for this, they're truly voting not only for their best interests and their family's best interests, but the best interests of anyone they know in Oregon, because it means we're going to have health care. It's a human right, and it's the foundation to housing, to education, to living a full and happy life, to so many things. So anyway, just really happy to be here, Emma. Thank you.
So what is the plan? I mean, I think you mentioned, Mary Beth, something about bringing something to the legislature or to the ballot in 28.
Yeah.
Did I hear that right? Yeah. So what's like, what's kind of the, what's the game plan for single payer healthcare? Timeline.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the board, as Valdez said, the board and the executive director, they'll probably start meeting next month, maybe even next week, right? It is almost April. And then they will do work. What they what they determined to focus on initially, that I couldn't tell you, Emma. But what I do know is that they're to give a report to the legislature at the end, in December of this year, kind of an interim report on what have they done in 2024. And then they'll continue to do their, you know, their building, right? You got to think about it. We have all these silos of healthcare. You know, how do we really include mental health and behavioral health issues into a universal, equitable healthcare system? How do the CCOs manage? Will it be one state thing? Will it be regional? We don't know the answer to those type of detail, but that's the work that will be going on over the course of the next 2 years. And then in 2027, in September of 2027, the board will submit to the legislature their final report, which will be the plan. And then the legislature will start evaluating that plan in the fall of 2027 and then act upon it in the 28th legislative session. So between now and then, Healthcare for All Oregon, we're not sitting silent. We're not, you know, twiddling our thumbs and waiting. We're out there educating Oregonians and activating them and, you know, looking at what is possible and what is going to be helpful in those intervening legislative years to make the board's work easier, frankly, right? Or that transition to a universal equitable system. And that brings us back to, you know, the corporate practice of medicine and this whole issue around corporatization in our healthcare system. And in the session, in this legislative session that just ended, the so-called short session, Representative Ben Bowman sponsored House Bill 4130, which was designed to really protect the doctor-patient relationship and make sure that, you know, clinics that are being, you know, that had to be 50% owned by actual clinicians, right? Not a bean counter, so that we as patients can feel confident that decisions are being made by me as the patient and my clinician, whether that's a doctor, a nurse practitioner, a PA, and not based on any pressure that individual might be getting from their for-profit entity. That bill got such tremendous support. Bipartisan support in the House, really, you know, HCAO and did a great job kind of organizing a coalition with Representative Bowman, and then it kind of fell victim to the short session and maybe some industry pressure from private equity firms that didn't want to see these kind of constraints put on them on what they can be doing. There was some pharmacy benefit managers, which are these elusive third party middle people that negotiate pharmaceuticals with, you know, prices with health plans and other entities. And there's a lot of mystery money in there, Emma. So we're going to continue to watch kind of this prescription drug landscape and other ways around increasing access and increasing accountability in our healthcare system. Because here's what we know: in a simplified, equitable, and affordable healthcare system, we're going to need accountability. We're going to need to have mechanisms in place so that board's work is, that transition is has a better not opportunity to succeed, but a smoother landing, I guess. Go ahead, Valdez.
I just wanted to add on here too, because, you know, sometimes I jump into these kind of forums and I just assume that everybody's like, you know, always with us on this issue. I just wanted to take a point to touch on four quick points. If you're a fellow veteran out there like me, I'm an Army veteran, I get VA care as well as care through my employer because we're in this employer-based system. I just want you all to know, like, we're doing this the governance board, they're working through, you know, these issues based on that Joint Task Force Universal Healthcare. You know, it's my opinion, and the opinion of a lot of others, so we're always going to need the VA to provide that, you know, culturally specific care that only the VA can provide to, like, veterans in terms of, like, PTSD, military sexual trauma, you know, a lot of the TBI work has been done. So in this universal healthcare, if you're a veteran, there's going to be always a place, of course, for the VA. If you're, I'm indigenous, my grandma was a Standing Rock Sioux. If you're native and you have IHS care, or you're at a tribe that has self-determination, you still are going to be able to get your care as well. It's just that right now, a lot of times you can get that basic care, but you can't get the specialty care. You can't get the surgery. You know, if you need anything more than your primary care visit or your basic meds or dental, you're kind of at a loss, and it's on you to start a GoFundMe like so many people do. So if you're native, like this is, you know, that's going to be a feature. Still going to have that, but you'd be able to have access beyond that without having to go into bankruptcy like so many Americans do. If you're a small business, I knew a guy that he had a car dealership up on Sandy on the mountain there somewhere. Had a successful dealership for 25 years, never went to the doctor because he couldn't afford to pay himself and his employees the insurance, right? And so he put it off. Finally, he came to the VA and they did heart surgery on him like that week because it was like a ticking time bomb. But there's so many small businesses that aren't able to afford the care. And that's got to cause cognitive dissonance when you have these small businesses and your team and your employees and you can't provide that care. And so this would take that away, right? Small businesses wouldn't have to worry about that. They can invest that money back into the business, back into the employer benefits and the other benefits and costs. So it'd be a huge lift for the small businesses who are a huge cornerstone of this movement. And then the last one I'll say is also labor. Sometimes they're from my labor friends. You know, I'm a former union member. I'm a labor friendly guy. Like, you know, we've negotiated hard for this. Like, we've got great healthcare benefits, but that costs us. We had to sacrifice a lot of things along the way to get there. But the thing is, like, healthcare would just be a part and parcel of your plan. You'd be able to expend those chips, so to speak, at the bargaining session the next time around, completely on wages, completely on other benefits, on job professional training, working conditions, all the other things. You wouldn't, you know, your employer wouldn't have to, you know, dangle healthcare in front of you as a way to cheat you out of other things. So I just want to say that whether you're a veteran, whether you're a native small business owner or labor, like, healthcare for all Oregon is a rising tide that truly is going to lift all boats, in my opinion, and so many others. So check us out at hco.org. You can read all about the plan on our legislative page. And better yet, sign up, become a member, and you'll get monthly updates at the minimum about where we're at with this from myself and Mary Beth.
So the goal then is to let the governance board at the state legislature do its work for 4 years, and then hopefully in 2028, the legislature will have enough information to take a look at this and actually act. What if the state legislature doesn't act on it? What's your plan then?
So I think there's a couple of things, right? You know, I don't want to, you know, tell my whole strategy to the world, but I think there, you know, over the course of the next couple of years, while the governance board is doing their work, we're not going to just let them go and do their own thing. We are going to help guide where we would like them to go through the involvement of Oregonians, right? It's not Valdez and I in some, you know, Machiavellian, you know, back room, you know, plotting everything, although don't we wish it were that easy. But really engaging Oregonians in that process and building that healthcare constituency, Emma, so that A, those folks are then talking to their lawmakers during this intervening time, right? It's not a one and done kind of thing, right? Really developing the relationships with those elected officials so that they are knowledgeable. I mean, God bless the folks that serve in the legislature, right? They are not experts on everything, right? They're experts on what's been in their kind of lived experience and maybe some other thing. So it's our job to help them know what, you know, what the facts are, and to educate them. And again, Valdez and I can't do it alone. So that's where, you know, Oregonians come in. Because if I'm an elected official out of John Day, I don't want to hear from somebody from Portland, right? Or even Corvallis, or even, you know, Jackson County. I want to hear from people in John Day, you know, about what they're feeling about this, because it is going to be an impact every single Oregonian. And as Valdez says, we think in a positive fashion, right? I mean, I just, again, myself, it's like, I can't imagine in a simplified, equitable, and affordable healthcare system that it is going to cost me $13,000, which is what it costs today, right? And I don't get, like, and let's be clear, and I don't get care, right? We spend the most of any nation in the world, and we have the least healthy people. So clearly, there is a disconnect there. And if we were inventing and designing our healthcare system today, no one would, well, maybe a couple of people, but most people would not design it to be siloed, inefficient, costly, and ineffective.
Right. And let's be clear, like when we talk about this system, like you should say, you know, $13,000 on average, every American's paying, right? It's expensive. So people are like 40% of their income or more are going towards medicine and healthcare, right? And so what we're talking about is if we have this universal healthcare system that ACO is fighting for, no more premiums, no more copays, no more deductibles. You know, you can afford your pharmaceuticals. You're not going to hit caps. You're not going to get some insurance person telling your doctor, no, Emma can't get this procedure because we don't think she's sick enough. Nothing like that. Like, you get the care that your provider, your care team, the hospital, right, they need to get you. And you're just in. You know, there's no payment at the point of service. I have a friend of ours that works with HCO. He fell out of a tree picking apples or something. It was like, you know, he's a farmer down in Corvallis. He falls out, breaks his arm, and goes to the ER. They wouldn't even see him. They wouldn't even do the surgery until he produced $10,000 in cash. I mean, what kind of system are we living in here? This is crazy. And that's like when people have care, they're like, oh, I've got care. I got good care. Well, is it good care? Can you actually get the care you need? And is it going to, you're going to go broke? I'm going to pay copays, deductibles, premiums. We know that whatever the system is that this governance board creates on this universal health plan that we're going to hope to pass here in a few years in Oregon, we won't have that. It'll definitely be less money than people are paying today, and they'll have better care.
Thanks. We've been talking today with Valdez Bravo, the president of Healthcare for All Oregon, and Maribeth Healy, the executive director of Healthcare for All Oregon. We have just about 2 or 3 minutes left. Are there any points that we haven't gotten to yet that you'd like to share with our listeners? Or is there anything that you'd like to share as a last thought?
I'll go, and then I'll give Maribeth the last word. I will say that we're just thankful for you, Emma, for having us on KBOO today to talk to listeners here in the community. Big, huge, we're ACO is huge KBOO fans. And we're so thankful for KBOO's partnership and sponsoring our May 10th blues event, Rhythm in Rio, the Blues Carnival. It's going to be the first time, I think, where, you know, talking to Norman Sylvester, he's a local treasure and a national gem in terms of the blues musician that he is. And he's a huge fan, a supporter, a champion for years before I got involved in this movement, Universal Healthcare. So Norman Sylvester and musicians and Bloco Alegria, one night only, May 10th, at the Aladdin Museum. You can go to the Aladdin, get tickets. And KBOO is going to be simulcasting that event. So we're really excited about that. Thank you so much, KBOO. I would just plug it. If you want to learn more, that's going to be a great way for folks that maybe don't know as much about ICO to come on down, have some good music, get some beads, and learn about universal healthcare and meet the folks that are leading this work in Oregon. And we really encourage you to check out our website, hco.org, and become a member today. Maribeth?
Yeah, thank you, Valdez. And I guess I would just close by saying sometimes, you know, we'll hear that, you know, this is an impossible mountain to climb, right? That y'all are just a bunch of crazy wishful thinkers. But this is the most exciting time to be in on the front lines of succeeding in a mission that people do think is impossible. Because, you know, the more we talk to people, the more they're with us, and opportunities like this to talk to folks really help spread the word and build our organization and the power and the support for a publicly funded universal healthcare system where everyone is in and no one is out. Thank you so much for having us, Emma. It's been fantastic.
Great. Thank you so much. We've been talking today with Valdez Bravo and Maribeth Healy from Healthcare for All Oregon. Thanks so much for joining us today on KBOO Community Radio.
Thanks, Emma. And all the seasons of my life, I don't know. Thank you.
Listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO's board is recruiting directors. In preparation for our annual board election in September, KBOO's nominating committee will be holding virtual information sessions from now through June. KBOO's Board of Directors guides the station's strategic plan and represents the interests and visions of all of our members. BIPOC persons are especially encouraged to apply. More information and meeting times can be found at kboo.fm/boardrecruiting. Thank you for considering board work at KBOO.
That's Doc Watson, one of the many artists you can hear on the Cascadia Coffee House each Friday morning.